This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
He kōna i purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
Hi, and welcome to Eating Fried Chicken in the Shower bonus episode. And I'm joined, as always, by clinical psychologist Saab Jahal. Saab, kia ora.
Kia ora, James. Nice to be here. Good to see you.
Good to see you too. Good to see anyone. Saab, with the... not the advent of social media, but more of how prevalent it is in our lives these days, especially in a time of lockdowns. What are the dangers that people have in tying our self-image to social media and the responses we get?
Yeah, I think it's useful to think about, you know, how we develop through that sort of like late childhood and then into that teen period. And that tells us a little bit about where our influences come from and where the traps might be. So if we think about sort of around about 8, 9 years old, that's when we start to kind of get this development of identity, right? And then it starts to go out into late childhood, early adolescence, and we actually start to see peer approval start to take much more of an influence. You know, parental approval is still important, but peer approval's rising in the stakes. And then we start to see adolescent self-esteem much more likely to be affected by the feedback that they get from people who are of their in their own social circle, in their own age. Now, what's different now compared to the past is that actually, you know, you might see drama, you might get bullying or feeling pressure to present yourself in a certain way. But all of that was happening in the here and now. In what was your real life circumstance, you know, your offline presence. But when it's online, you know, as well as the positive stuff that happens, you know, that can enhance your self-esteem, I guess the big issue is around digital footprint. So when you get like a passing negative comment that might happen in the classroom or somewhere else, it's usually kind of forgotten and there's only a few people who might have witnessed that, you know, life moves on. But the rise in like online environments, which we're hanging out in, means that if a teen says the wrong thing, it might not be forgotten by their peers so easily. And the audience, if it goes viral and it's shared, then multiplies by a factor that's, you know, quite incredible. It can really get out there. And that's the thing that's really dangerous, I think, and can really lead to people getting really upset around how quickly it spreads and how many people see it.
It's kind of like it's not just the environment, because I think we often think of social media as an online environment and, you know, then the real world. And to that degree, you can edit and filter, to use the language, you know, who you're interacting with and what kind of person you're interacting with. You know, it's not just about being cool to your classmates or cool to your team. It's also about being cool to the to the random strangers online. But then what you're saying is it's the online language itself, you know, the way in which digital images stick around, the way in which tweets or posts of any kind stick around, which means it's a lot different to the generations that have come before.
Yeah, absolutely. And then if you kind of see the interaction with, you know, this is a really sensitive stage for a lot of young people in their development. And adults, I think, can sometimes forget how personally hurtful it can feel when you haven't had the time and the life experiences to be more comfortable in your identity, for it to roll off you. You know, if you can see something like that and repeatedly being exposed to it, it can feel much more, you know, hurtful to your this nascent, still being developed sense of identity that you're going through, that, you know, developing that.
I mean, one thing I've been doing is I've been off a lot of social media for the past couple of months. And I guess I'm old enough to know that that's not going to, you know, be the end of the world and something I needed to do. It's what are some things that people can do when they're feeling that their self-image is too tired or getting too crushed by what's going on online.
Yeah, I think, you know, taking time out is a really, really good example of that as an adult, or, you know, if you have a teen or you're worried about other people, then I think encouraging them to sit down and do a bit of a social media clear out, as well as kind of limiting time and exposure, you know, take a couple of hours to sit with your teen, delete any accounts that they follow that aren't guiding them towards, you know, a healthier, happier life, you know, really think about the ecosystem that they're setting themselves in. And how is it that they can influence what it is that they see? You know, you can influence how the algorithm is serving up things to you by making better settings. So not just who you're following, but also your privacy settings too. So making accounts on social media sites like Facebook, Instagram private means that you can then limit who sees your posts and what else you might see too.
And there's something to be said for the instantaneousness of social media affecting how we view our mental health journey, isn't there?
You know, it can feel very visceral, you know, not just what we're seeing in the moment, but also if we're seeing a lot of that for a long period of the day, it can start to outweigh what it is that we might be experiencing outside of that, you know, social media online feed too.
Well, I've been offline for a couple of months. This is the reason I bring it up, you know, and people are like, oh, are you gone? Have you quit? I was like, no, I'm just taking a break. And like, but it's been a couple of months. I'm like, yeah, but it's just been a couple of months. And is that just a change in my mentality? Like just seeing the need for the instantaneous, not as much as some of my peers? Or?
Yeah, I mean, it can take a little while, but once you step out of it for a little while, then you start to perhaps look at it from a different point of view. But those people who are still immersed in it look at you as if you're the outsider, you're the outlier, you're the person who's not doing the thing that everybody else is doing. But once you're outside of it, then you start to perhaps connect with other people who are thinking similar to you, starting to think about how much time they're spending online and trying to strike a bit more of a balance as to the place that it takes in their lives. You know, I've been through similar things myself where I say, you know what, I'm just going to take a week away from that and just change my perspective a bit. And then when I do re-engage, I try to re-engage with it a bit more mindfully and not let the time just whiz by and suddenly, you know, where did the last couple of hours go?
Do you think that, I'm trying to think of how to word this respectfully, that we just aren't necessarily as aware as we used to be of how long a mental health journey can actually take? And maybe films are a little bit of an influence here as well, in terms of, you know, you watch a film and someone's going through a mental health journey and in 90 minutes, they've done the whole thing. But, you know, from my own personal experience, it takes years. I feel like people are sometimes forgetting that.
Yeah. And you're right. I think what we see is very much a curated kind of version of what a mental health journey might look like. And the reality is that there are bumps along the way, and you have periods of wellness that can be interspersed with relapses where you need treatment more perhaps than you would do at other times. And that's actually much more of a realistic pathway up. You know, you take three steps forwards, you take a couple of steps back, sometimes are better than others. But what we get is a more truncated kind of curated view of that, I think.
As for some of our listeners, and I'm thinking especially for the ones who are on longer journeys, who might view the current environment and are feeling maybe like they're, you know, like, I don't want to say failing, but you know what I mean, in terms of it doesn't seem to be as picture perfect a mental health journey as they've seen. What are some tips for our listeners who are having longer mental health journeys to let them know that, you know, that's, as you say, it's quite normal?
I think you're right. And I think, you know, my experience of, you know, relatives and friends who have been through a similar thing is that recognizing that it's not a simple one-way journey. Each time it happens that you have an episode or something is difficult, it's an opportunity to learn how to be more alert for warning signs in your own particular journey. And I think that's the key to remember, is that your journey, another person's journey, although they may look similar, you know, if you look at it from a long view, actually the detail is very different. Everybody's journey with depression, anxiety, or whatever is showing up in your life that you're living alongside is going to look quite different. So figuring out how to get help sooner, learning about what it is that you need to do to manage how that shows up in your life, or what you can do to keep yourself not just safe, but healthy and thriving alongside your experience of managing mental illness in your life, then becomes the key, I think, rather than trying to avoid it or wishing that you get to the end. And as hard as a message that sounds, is that actually the reality is that it's fits and spurts of having good times and bad times, just like life is.
And one last thing, sir, one of the best bits of advice I ever got talking about mental health was years ago from a dear friend who said, people who are going through mental health issues don't necessarily like to talk about their mental health issues. And I clearly didn't listen. But there's a weight that comes with talking about trauma. And we've talked about this kind of stuff before. And I'm just wondering, is there language that people can use when they're talking, people come to them to talk about mental health, not just for me, but for other people who are open about their mental health, to let people know that, hey, I'm glad that what I've said helps you. But, I guess what I'm asking is, are there ways in which we can tell people, hey, I can't talk about this right now, without making them feel lesser?
Yeah, I think what you're talking about here is, as well as feeling almost like this burden of responsibility, I've been through this and I want to help other people to understand what it is and perhaps even assist them in some way through sharing my story or finding connection points with them. I think that that's absolutely fantastic. But I think that, again, you recognize that sometimes can weigh heavy on your shoulders, as well as dealing with whatever is going on in your life. Sharing that story doesn't come without cost. And managing how much of that you do at any one period of time, also recognizing that at some point it's going to be easier than others. And I think that it's not necessarily needing to talk about that all the time. Like you say, you've changed your behavior online such that you're going to have a little bit of a time out and minimizing your exposure, perhaps with connecting with a community who might be reaching out for help with you. So recognizing and talking and saying, I'd love to help you, but right now I'm on a little bit of a break and looking after myself for a while. Let me know a way that I can catch up with you when I have a bit more space available to speak about that, I think is a perfectly acceptable way for people to prioritize their self-care as well as trying to help and look out for others.
Clinical psychologist Saab Jahel, thank you very much.
Kia ora, James. Always good to see you and talk.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.